Welcome to the Balanced Perspective Podcast, where we're going to be challenging perspectives on what it actually takes to become successful in business and in life every single week. I'm Terri Ann Richards, your friendly neighborhood serial entrepreneur and your guide to growing an impact-driven business, fueling both your community and your life at home. Enjoy this episode. Hey, y'all, this is Terri Ann Richards, and you are listening to The Balanced Perspective. I'm here with my guest, Siobhan Kukulik, who is a published author of the book, The Treasure You Seek, a book about following your heart, believing in yourself beyond reason, embracing failure, and knowing that you are enough. She's also a freelance writer for The Huffington Post and a coach. Welcome.
Hello, Terri Ann. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to have you on today. I've done a lot of research on you, and just pre-hitting record, we sort of chatted a bit, and I didn't want to go too far in my research of you because I wanted to stay curious because you're quite the interesting cat.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you. It's a great thing to hear.
Thank you. So before we jump into all the juicy details about your book, because I certainly know that the audience is going to want to know more about this book and sort of the journey to writing that,
right?
I'd like for you to share with the audience a little bit about your journey before authorship, before writing the actual book. So who were you before you were an author?
Wow. Well, I've always loved words. I've always been kind of a writer at heart. And I went to school, got an honors psychology degree. I did a postgrad in media copywriting. So I learned, you know, how to write websites and brochures and all kinds of advertising pieces. And then I became a mom and I freelanced for 17 years as a mom of three. I now have two teens and a tween. But during that time, I used my written word skills to do a lot of pro bono work and to help change health policy and to help be a community advocate for people and, you know, give deputations at the city or at the school board. And I was a writer. I got into writing, you know, columns, little things in the paper and, you know, letters to the editor and things like that. So I've always loved the written word. And it was just then I had always had this goal to publish a book. And that kind of brought me into this story where I originally made the goal of 100 rejection letters when I, you know, decided to actually go for it. Cause I thought, you know, Dr. Seuss got 43 rejections. He got a few things published. I'll go for 100. And again, that was perspective, right? So that perspective meant that every time I got a rejection, because I did get 32 rejections over the years for various children's book manuscripts. I started as a children's book manuscript idea. Every time I got a rejection letter, it was one more yellow brick on the yellow brick road to my Oz. So it just spun it on its head, and it wasn't a failure. It was a step towards success. And so that perspective shift gave me the control to say, okay, I did something great today. I got a rejection letter. I'm one more step closer to my 100 versus having a pity party and saying, nobody likes my writing. I can't get published. I can't get in anywhere. So I went along this track, and then finally, January 1st, 2016, I just thought, I'm just going to start a blog. I'm just going to start my blog, put my words out there. So I made a goal. I said, 3 mornings a week, I'll get up 40 minutes early before I have to leave. I had to drive the kids to school. We had a house in the school district, but we were renovating it, so I had to drive them in. And I had 40 minutes to get up, stare at a blank page, no topic in mind, and write 250-word blog about something that inspired me. And in that time slot, I had to write it, spell check it, submit it, and run out the door. So again, it was the whole idea of eating an elephant one steak at a time. You know, 3 mornings a week, you write one page. 4 months into that, I got picked up as a contributor for Huffington Post, which again, perspective, if I had emailed them the first day before I wrote the first blog, what are they looking at? Versus kind of going in and saying, here's something I'm writing, can I contribute? I already had something on the table. And now I contribute for Thrive Global, which is Arianna Huffington's new great movement. But that gave me a lot of mojo at that time, 4 months in. And then 12 months in, I signed a contract to publish my book. And so January 1st to December 31st, I basically went from first page of a blog to a contract to write a book. And then by June 2017, I had my first book signing and the book was live. Yeah. So wow. It was a great journey.
So what I really love about this is you set out sort of with the goal in mind, but you knew in advance there were going to be roadblocks. And I think that's the thing that so many of us in our life in general, you know, not just entrepreneurship, but so right. many of us have a goal of winning. And right. when we don't win the way that we had anticipated our win to happen, we quit. We quit because, you know, the going get tough, we quit.
That's right.
But you sort of said, well, actually, there's all these other people who seem to do these really cool things and ended up being successful. So if they got 47?
Right. Dr. Seuss got 43 rejections for his first book. And there's so many. And the other part of my goal was, so I ended up publishing with Friesen Press, which is a Canadian publishing house in BC, which I loved. And I went with them because I got I heard a shout out on Twitter from Margaret Atwood. I thought, okay, Margaret Atwood, she's got a few books under her belt and she was speaking highly of them. But again, I looked at my goal and said, what is my goal? My goal is to have a book that I can then share and go and speak to schools and corporations about these messages. So I kind of thought, okay, let me kind of make this happen, get the book out there. And then I started going into schools and corporations and talking about the people that I spoke about in my book, people like Michael Jordan, who, again, you know, when they say you win or you learn, I mean, he was as successful as he was, which, you know, I'm currently watching The Last Dance on Netflix. So it just reminds you again, how incredible his talent is, but even more so his work ethic. Like the fact that he still did 2 hours of practice after a loss to kind of, you know, bring himself up to the next level. And when you think of all those people that they succeeded because they failed. I mean, Michael Jordan was the player he was because of the baskets he missed, because of the buzzer beater shots that he didn't make, and then what he brought to the next game. So I think that if we have that perspective, that it really is you win or you learn. It's not you win or you lose, and take that with you to the next stage. And so the rejection letters, you know, fueled me to keep going until I ended up at the place I was supposed to be. And if I had got the book published 10 years earlier, I would have had young kids. Maybe I wouldn't have been able to do the speaking things that I was doing at the time and going into schools. And it really is, you know, life is what happens when you're making other plans. So you have to pivot and have perspective and just, you know, think of it as if I'm the same person as I was a year ago, I think I'm not doing enough to grow. So in order to grow, you have to take chances and fail. So you have to just keep moving forward.
100%. It reminds me of, you know, I've been a serial entrepreneur since I was 18 years old. I've had many different companies and I like to joke that I have my MBA from the streets because I actually don't have an MBA. I just got it through
street
a trial.
Smarts.
Yeah.
Street so smarts,
just,
right.
Yeah. Just trial and error. And about 25, 26 years old, I can't really remember. I ended up failing right. miserably, failing rather publicly right. and going bankrupt. And, you know, so it was a big shot to my ego.
Right.
And I remember thinking like, this is the worst freaking thing that could ever possibly happen in my life
right.
like, at that time. Right.
right.
And I remember a pretty successful, predominant businessman here locally was a mentor of mine. He sort of took me aside and he poured me a glass of wine and he said, "Welcome to the club."
Right.
I was like, what club is this?
All right. Like, how did I get in here?
Yeah. Like, how did I get in? I didn't apply for this club.
Right.
And he just sort of said, you know, you don't, how did he put it? It was, you haven't tried hard enough if you haven't failed. Like you haven't right. done big things, great things in your life if you haven't failed. And he just sort of said like, chin up, kid, because right. this is a bumpy road. And this is a lesson. And so take the lesson and let me know when you open up your next company. And that was
right.
like such an empowering piece of advice. It bewildered me at the time. Cause I was like, what is he talking about? Cause I was,
right.
you know, I was a sook. I was upset and I was hurt.
Right.
But then when I got to the other side, it was like, oh, I get it. Like
right.
I wouldn't be able to do the things I do right now.
Had that not happened.
And the
right.
stuff I do now, man, do I ever love it. And I,
right.
I can't even, like, I loved that company, but I can't
right.
imagine still doing it today, right?
100%. And I think that that's what we have to, and, you know, as a mom of three teens, tweens, I'm always telling them too. I mean, you have to take the chances. You have to put yourself out there. We're big, you know, they're dance, Irish dancers, and they're in theater and on stage. And it's just like, you take those risks, and that's how you just find yourself, by almost losing yourself, right? This is the way you get there, is by kind of everything you think you knew, you really don't know. And you can only find that out by potentially failing. And I always say to my kids too, I mean, you really never want to be the smartest person in the room. You want to be the person that's asking the questions, that don't ever be scared that you're not going to look smart if you don't have the answer. You want to be asking the questions, because you're probably asking a question that three quarters of the room would also like to ask, but don't have the courage to ask. So again, some would look at that as a failure, like that you're in a room of, you know, up and comers, and you're asking a question, you're not looking like a leader. But that's how you grow, and that's how you get to the next stage. And who are the five people around you? You become the average of those five people. So raise your average, and, you know, be around people that you aspire to learn from and grow from, and that's how to get there.
Girl, you are speaking my language. I feel like everything I've written over the last 10 years, you're just taking little nuggets of it and reminding me that those were good pieces of information. I absolutely love that.
Birds of a feather. Birds of a feather. Yeah.
I agree.
That's awesome.
So I think I read on your website, on your blog, that you are currently studying positive psychology, character grit, and research methods with Angela Duckworth. And so Angela Duckworth wrote the book Grit,
which, right, I loved. I read that book. Yeah.
Oh, it's such a good, if you haven't read this book, folks, you need to read this book.
So good. Yeah.
So if you don't know, next perspective, my next favorite word is grit. I love grit because I like love everything it. That it stands for. So can you tell me more about the course, and what were you hoping that this would do for either your career or the people that you coach?
For sure. So I actually discovered Coursera, which I love. It's you can take courses through Coursera. So I did the science of well-being through Yale. And then I did Marty Seligman's positive psychology course. And it's on, there's another one on the character strengths, and one with Karen Rivich. And now this one with Angela Duckworth. And it's just great. It's you know, so many of the things she talks about. What I spoke in my blog this week was that she was saying that one of the studies she did talked about how self-discipline was a much bigger predictor of success than IQ when they looked at grade 8 students. And the whole thing about self-discipline is, we all have that as a muscle. It's just like grit. It kind of goes hand in hand with grit. You know, grit is something that we all have. Self-discipline is something that we all have, but we have to work it like a muscle. So the good thing about it is that it evens the playing field. It's not like you need money to have it, or you need connections to have it. You have it, but it's like the example I used in my blog is, do you decide I'm going to do 5 push-ups a day until I can do 6? So it's not like you're saying, oh, how come I can't do 100 push-ups? You start where you are and you go forward. And she talks too about, you know, perspective, and again, do you see the control in your life in your own hands or in other people's hands? Do you look at life and say, it's because of my upbringing, my lack of money, it's because this happened to me when I was younger? Everybody has a story. And I always say, often, if we all put our stories on the table, we take our own back, because everybody has a story. And then number two, sometimes we have to remember that, you know, what we're carrying can be heavy, but we don't have to carry it. We can put it down. So we, you know, we all have those, you know, weights in our life, but do we have to carry them day by day by day? And even in the current situation, you know, with the global pandemic happening, you know, I've said to people, like, I'm working from home now too. We're not really working from home. We're home during a global pandemic trying to work. So it is a very different perspective. You have to remember to take care of yourself, self-care. And I heard an example recently about when you think of, if you have, I drink tea, so I'll have maybe 4 cups of tea a day. So how many times a day do you lift your tea mug or your coffee mug to your mouth? Maybe 100 times, and you don't notice it. But what if you had to take that coffee or tea mug and hold it over your head all day long? Your arm would start to quiver, you'd start to get palpitations. So the kind of everyday thoughts and maybe a little bit of anxiety that we've always had was just lifting the cup to our lips. We could do that, we didn't notice. Now we're holding the mug above our head. So we have to remember that, like, put the mug down, don't expect yourself to be producing as much as you would be if we weren't in a global pandemic, because we have all these other, you know, things around us. But at the same time, we can take our own control back. What can we control? We can wash our hands. We can choose how much we put into our brain. You know, are we feeding our brain cotton candy or are we feeding our brain kale? Like in the sense of what are we watching? What are we reading? Who are we talking to? If we talk to somebody that's catastrophizing everything, all of a sudden we feel out of control and everything's at the end of the rope. Whereas if we talk to somebody that's saying, the sun will rise again, you know, read 5 pages of a book that inspires you, go for a 15-minute walk and you kind of start to feel energized. So again, that's the type of things that I'm learning in these courses, like the one with Angela Duckworth, where it's just about grit is, you know, they even did a study where they looked at National Spelling Bee students that make it to the finals. And in multiple years, when they looked at out of all the kids that ended up in the National Spelling Bee and then in the finals, that the factor that made the most difference was self-discipline and grit, not IQ. So it wasn't those with the highest IQ tests that ended up in the finals of the National Spelling Bee. And that's really, you know, an example for life. It's not always the most talented. You know, talent can take you to a point, but you have to put in the work. You know, as they say, it takes 100 no's to get a yes. So if you give up on the, you know, think about it yourself. If you failed 3 times, how would you feel? If you failed, you know, 17 times, how would you feel? You know, Edison failed 10,000 times with a light bulb. Like, think about it. Like, for him, it was just, it wasn't rejection, it was redirection, right? So it's just slowly redirecting yourself to where you want to go. Again, it's the perspective. So if you look at it like, I'm such a failure, I've tried 9,000 times to figure out the light bulb and I can't do it. I mean, he just kept going, you know? And even with Edison, I read about how there was a night that there was a fire in his lab and everything just blew up. Like, the family came and it just burned to the ground. But the thing is, his brain didn't burn, his ideas didn't burn. So he just went on and did so many other patents after that. And, you know, his family was there and he said, well, you know, keep going. And that's a really huge mountain to overcome when you've got all this experiments and things that were going on in his office and it all burned up, but he still had his heart and his inspiration and his brain. And we all have that, even now in the pandemic, even if we lose our job or if we're going through a medical crisis, we still have that core and that kernel of ourselves. And we have to say, you know, how can we keep going and kind of figure it out?
Well, I think that there's, you know, some real truth to that. And I think the reality of it is so many people are afraid of failure, right? Afraid of that rejection. But I love what you said there, you know, that rejection is really just a redirection, right? Because that is the reality, right? You need to crawl before you walk, you need to walk before you run. And so if we just kind of take the methods and the practices we all kind of started off with and recognize that it's just, we're just on a journey, right? Like, the destinations are slightly unique and slightly different for all of us, but we're on this journey called life, and there is success at every single corner. You just need to learn to look for them, right? Because they're not maybe the successes that you expect it.
Well, yeah, it's the silver linings. Every day, really, you can find a silver lining. I mean, there's always, you know, we had a point last year, we were moving. The moving truck scratched my van in the driveway and did like $7,000 damage. My son got hit by a car on his bike. Thankfully, he was okay. He had a peanut butter reaction. He's got a peanut allergy, and we went to the hospital for that. All these things happened, but it kind of really got me grounded to say, in the end, we have each other, we have our health. It all worked out. And you could look at each of those instances and say, wow, why are all these things happening? But I almost feel like it's like the world around me kind of saying, wake up and realize what you have, and you can keep going. And these things are just bumps on the road. And really, when it comes to failure, if the door doesn't open, it's not your door. That's what I've always thought of. Like, you could sit there and marinate. I didn't get the promotion. I didn't get the job. I didn't get the house, or I didn't do whatever it is. But in the end, I think you really end up, it's not to say that you can't keep trying and put the effort in. You don't just sit and, you know, opportunity knocks. But if it doesn't go your way, it probably was better that it didn't. You know, the lesson is on the other side. And we just have to kind of keep looking for those silver linings.
So you touched on sort of self-discipline, and I really, so I read the book Grit, and I did. Equally interested in obviously the same subjects as you. So I love that. There's definitely some synergy here. And and you know, they talk a lot about IQ sort of peaks around like the late teens, early 20s for most people. So most people think their IQ will be the thing. But right. if you look at, you know, Ivy League folks who have graduated, some of them still don't even have jobs, right? Because right. it's their EQ. And to your point, those habitual habits, their ability to have self-discipline that right. makes them or breaks them, which is why you can literally find somebody who's from a broken home and, you know, financial literacy was maybe at a zero and they're multimillionaires today because they had nothing to lose. So they just kind of built these habits right. and became awesome individuals, you know, doing great things. Right. So I guess a question I have for you would be, how does one build that muscle, right? Like for people who, you know, because habits are hard and I'll just be honest with you right now. Right now I'm doing a plank challenge.
Right. That's a good one.
It's a good one, right? But what I like about this challenge is every day I'm beating yesterday. I'm not right. trying to do like a 5 minute, you know, plank challenge every day. I literally like, I think I started off, I was like a minute and 12 seconds. It was embarrassing. Right. And then, you know, and then the next day I was like a minute and 19. Well, right. 2 days ago, I was up to 2 minutes and 24 seconds, which
that's amazing.
Whoa. Because I'm not in competition with anyone but myself. I'm trying
that's
to build.
The way to go.
Yeah. I'm trying to build a habit. So how do people build that muscle of self-discipline?
Right. And I think, well, one of the angles that kind of connects into it is the whole fixed and growth mindset, right? So, you know, as we know, the fixed mindset says you're born as you are, you're good at math, you're bad at science, there's nothing you can do about it. Doesn't matter how much effort you put in, you are what you are. And if that was the case, then Michael Jordan should have been the best basketball player of all time from birth. And he got cut from the grade, you know, from the grade nine basketball team. So, you know, that there, it doesn't make sense as far as fixed. And then growth mindset would look at it and say, it doesn't matter what I'm better at or not as good at. If I put the effort in and the time, I can compete against myself and I can get there. And I think that if we use that as part of our self-discipline and only be trying to better yourself, I think that's so huge. I tell the story in one of the talks that I give about my three kids are Irish dancers. And when my oldest son got to champ, which is the highest level of Irish dance, he got there, he earned a spot, but he was about 2 or 3 years too early. He kind of got there by a perfect storm, got the wins, but then he went 4 years never placing at a competition. So at each competition, they would call out the numbers and he'd be looking at his number and it was never his number. But he would come up to me at the end of the competition and say, oh, I was two better than last time. Or I was two off the podium this time. So that was his win. So that was how he kept his self-discipline going. And then what happened was we were going to the North American Irish Dance Championships. It was in, where was it? It was down south in New Orleans. And I had booked the flights, booked the hotels, and 3.5 weeks before we flew out, I got the call from the school, and you never like to see the school number on the phone, the secretary saying he rolled his ankle playing basketball at recess. So any dance mom with the feet and the ankles, you just, so ran over. Initially, they thought it was broken, found out it wasn't broken, but the orthopedic surgeon said, you cannot dance for 3.5 weeks. So that's saying, you know, basically while everyone else is preparing for the quote dance Olympics, you cannot do anything but rest your foot. So he did that. And the night before we left, he went back to the orthopedic surgeon. He looked at the x-rays. He said, you can go. You're good. So he could have got into his own mind and thought, everyone else has been practicing. Everybody else is, I've never. And I just said, you know the steps. You know what to do. We get down there. He does his first two rounds. They start calling the numbers of who gets recalled for a medal. And they call his number. And he was 21st place in North America that year, which to me was such a perfect show of how that self-discipline worked. He could have given up years ago and said, obviously, I'm a terrible dancer. I'm not getting placed at any of these competitions. But he just kept looking at his own win, which was one better than last week, one off the podium. And that's how we got there. And the same thing I talk about in my book, Penny Oleksiak, the 16-year-old from Toronto, who was the swimmer who went to the Olympics when she was 16, and she went basically for practice. Like she just had no concept of placing at the Olympics. She was only 16. And she ended up getting, you know, all these medals, set all these records, and she got the gold medal in the freestyle race. And I still remember her face when she, because she was 7th out of 8th at the last turn, but she wasn't swimming against the other swimmers. So if she had been saying, oh, her arms are stronger, her legs are stronger in the other lanes, she would have lost the race. But she was only swimming against herself, and so she won. And the look on her face when she touched the wall and turned back and saw gold, to me, that's all of us in life. Like, we cannot be looking at the other lane. Swim in your lane, swim against yourself, and make that your self-discipline. So like you said, is your plank 2 seconds longer than yesterday? Can you do one more push-up? Can you read 5 more pages? How can you better yourself? And in the end, that's how you win the race, you know?
It's scary to think that the devil is really in comparison, right? It's, you know, death by comparison, and that slows us down. It halts us from taking the chance, taking the leap, you know, trying that new thing that maybe we never tried before.
Right.
Have you always been like this?
Well, I've always had that. I'm very blessed that I have a mom who just kind of gave me more confidence than I deserve. Like, I feel like I've always just thought I could do anything. And like, I always had a soft place to fall. So failure is easier to embrace when you know you have a soft place to fall, because then you can rise again. But I, you know, definitely one thing I wish I knew from the book, The Four Agreements, you know, what other people think of you is none of your business. I wish I knew that in high school. You know, those kinds of things you learn as you go. But I really did, I feel like I had some great friends in high school, great friends in university, and I definitely had to find myself. And even to this day, you wonder, should I take this course or should I have made that decision? But you kind of have to keep coming back to the fact that, like you said, comparison is the thief of joy, right? As the quote goes by Roosevelt, and you can't compare yourself to others, because you can right now look at people on social media, friends of yours, and say they seem more successful, they have more money, they have a happier relationship, their kids are doing better, whatever it is. But in the end, I think there's a lot of sides to every story. And so we only see, like, nobody plays their, people only share their highlight reel usually on social media and places like that, right? So you have to think to yourself, what are all the amazing things that I've accomplished? And for some people today, it might be just getting up. Maybe that's what made today amazing for you. So just kind of judge yourself by your own improvements. And with habits too, like, you know, I think a lot of times, if we're not who we really are, if we kind of try to fit ourselves into some mold that society says we should be, Glennon Doyle talks about this in her new book, Untamed 2, which is amazing. We basically cry out in other ways. So if we can't be who we really are, then we numb those feelings of sadness with, it could be gambling, it could be an addiction to something, it could be food, it could be relationships. And so we have to really let ourselves shine in life. Like, one of my favorite quotes is Mary Oliver, tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? So we just have this one life. And even today, we're exchanging a day for it. Like, we're exchanging a day in our life today for what we're doing. Are we happy with how we're spending our time? Are we in a job that we love? Are we with friends that appreciate us? You know, where are the little places in the habit side of things that we can do, want to change a little something here or there to kind of make us really be alive for that journey? So I think we have to just remember that we really are perfectly imperfect, and we shouldn't compare.
Absolutely. So they say how low you've gone is typically how high you'll rise. Is there some pivotal moment that you feel has shaped the way in which you look at the world, good or bad?
Right. Well, I think, you know, becoming a mom has always been something that just was on my radar. And I feel like I have really focused the last 2 decades, really, because I was freelancing for that time, on, you know, being kind of around my kids and being at all the activities and things like that. So that really kind of gave me another perspective that it's not just about me, that there's other players in the field here and there's other things going on. But I think that going on this journey, getting published finally, there definitely were points that you kind of wondered, because it was, you know, probably over 16 years that I kind of thought about it, sent out letters, got rejections, and I kind of kept there. I had a few friends that would be like, are you still writing? Are you going to publish something? So those little kind of people in your ear that tell you to keep going. So I would say the publishing process and kind of seeing the other side of it and realizing, you know, even when I got my book published, I remember the day it went live, I phoned the local Indigo, because it said Indigo on Amazon. And I said, you know, do you do book signings? And they said, oh, yes. You know, right now we're looking at November. This was June for book signings on a Saturday. And I said, oh, okay, what about weeknights? And they said, oh, yeah, we do weeknights. And I said, what about next week? And the next week was the last week of school. So I thought, why not? What am I waiting for? So booked it in, got in the newspaper, you know, got my network out and had like a great book signing. But again, I think I learned during those years of rejection and not finding a way, that really you're just one phone call, one email, one connection away from getting to your goal or getting to the next step on the staircase. I think that's what I've learned over all these years, that you can't judge yourself by what other people are doing. And you know, society is set up on dogma. Basically, somebody made the rule, somebody decided this is how you apply for this, this is how you do this. And so we can live our life saying, I can't fit the rules, or you can write your own script, you know? So I think, I'm not saying break the rules or do anything illegal, but I mean, you can, for me, I often will email the CEO of a company because I figure, what's the worst case scenario? They delete it, or maybe they forward it on to HR or somewhere else if I was trying to go and speak about my book or whatever. So what's the worst thing that can happen? And I think if we go there and realize that the worst thing is not really the worst thing, it kind of gives us freedom to be who we are. So I definitely have still a work in progress, but I think I've always been kind of very outspoken and kind of doing things my way. And it's kind of served me well so far, I hope.
I think that's a really good piece of advice. It's a piece of advice my mother gave me when I was younger. She's like, what, you know, what's the worst that could happen? If you ask and the answer is no, where are you now? The same place you started off. Like,
exactly.
Nothing has changed.
It's not like they're going to scream at you and say, how dare you ask me? And have, I mean, you ask, they say no, you move on to the next thing. And sometimes someone would say no, but they might say, oh, but why don't you talk to Terri Ann? Because she's somebody you might be, you know, so it lends itself to a new path. So really, I always say, ask the question, put yourself out there. I remember even running, you know, I was vice president of grade 13 in high school, and I just went out and did it. And then, you know, you just kind of take your chances. Maybe you don't win the election, maybe you do, you know, so you just have to kind of I remember actually once when my oldest child was in grade 6, he decided to run for parliamentary secretary. And, you know, he had a few friends that he wasn't like, you know, the Mr. Popular or anything like that. But he wrote, I told him at the time, I said, this is my advice, keep your speech short, like, you know, 5 sentences. And I said, you know, at the time, Rob Ford was the mayor of Toronto, and he had his demons and he was in the news and that. But I said, you know, Rob Ford has his demons, but he has his one message, you know, and his message is cut the gravy train. So what's your one message? And he said, my message is to have all the students' voices heard. I said, great. So he writes the speech, and the morning of the speech, he reads it to me. And in one part, he had said, he said a line and then he put in brackets, hold for the applause to stop. Okay. So I thought to myself, oh my goodness, I don't know if there's going to be any applause. Like, I don't know how everyone's going to take it. So I said to him, why don't you ask your one friend that you're close to when you say that line to clap, if that's where you want applause or whatever. So he came home that night and he said, it went great. I didn't even use my friend, and everybody clapped and laughed at the right places. And he ended up winning the election. And he was only in grade 6, and there was kids in grade 8 running. So I thought that was a great example of, he took a risk. He didn't have anything guaranteed. He went out there. He was authentic. He was honest. And he ended up, you know, reaching his goal. And I think we can all take a little lesson from that in life, is that, are you scared to ask for a promotion at work or maybe for a raise? Are you scared to ask to join a committee? Again, they talk about the flow, you know, that one psychologist, what's his last name? It's hard to pronounce. Csikszentmihalyi, I think. Csikszentmihalyi. He's a psychologist, and he talks about flow. So he talks about, you have high effort and low effort, high skill and low skill. So if what you're doing is low effort and low skill, you're kind of apathetic. If what you're doing is low effort and high skill, you're kind of relaxed because you've got the skill, it doesn't take much effort. If what you're doing has high skill, it needs high skill and you don't have it, then that's when you get anxious. And flow is when you need your high skill and you need the high effort. That's when you really feel in that flow at work, where you might forget to have something to eat. And that's where you really want to be in life, in that flow. And you can be there if you're using kind of the character traits, you know, when you think of yourself and say, I really love to do X, how can I fit X into my daily life? Whether it's my athletic pursuits, my job, things with friends, you know, community advocacy. If you're in the flow, I mean, you find your happiness in your everyday life, for sure.
I love that. So I call that your genius zone. And so when I work with clients, I'm always trying to focus in on what's their genius zone, which it sounds like, what's their flow, right?
Right.
Where do they work in sort of that awesome, excited energy where things are just flowing from them. And yes, they totally could forget lunch and work, you know, 16 hours if they needed to, and not feel like there was any energy depletion. And imagine if 80%, 85% of the world were to work in flow.
Well, this is, and they talk about the VIA character survey, which is what Martin Seligman talked about in the course I was taking through University of Pennsylvania. You can do that free online, the VIA character survey, and there's 24 character traits. So there's a youth version and an adult version. You do your quick survey and you'll come out with your it'll rate you on all 24 character traits, but you want to look at your top five. And out of those top five, if you can fit one of those into your everyday life, so whatever it is, for me, some of mine are curiosity, love of learning, perspective. And if you're using one or more of those top character traits in what you do every day, this is the key to happiness. And this is total kind of connection with well-being. Whereas if you look at your everyday and you're using most of your lower end character traits, that's where you struggle, right? Because you're doing things you don't really feel connected with or authentic about. And it's not to say that you have to say, okay, I'm leaving my job because it's not within my character traits, but maybe there's a parallel move at work. Maybe there's a committee at work you can join that pulls into your top character traits. So I think there's ways for us to take a chance and make a change at this, any day of your life. I mean, today's the first day of the rest of your life. So you can change at any point and do something new. So I think the character traits is a great way to find that place where you might want to insert a little bit of extra, you know, soul fuel into your life.
Awesome. Thank you. So I want to talk about your book. So I have not had the privilege of reading it yet. So I will be ordering it. Saw that you have a goal of getting the book, and the book is The Treasure You Seek, into the hands of 1 million people.
Right.
Big goal. Like, I remember when I wrote my first book, my goal was like 1,000.
Right.
So you like aimed very high, lady.
Yes.
So tell me, what effect were you hoping to give to the folks that are reading that book? What were you hoping the outcome would be?
Well, yeah, because the way the book is set up, it's like 250 word blogs, and it's kind of, you know, 3 days a week. So it takes you through the year of 2016. So there could be things that happened. David Bowie died, the anniversary of the shuttle disaster, or something in politics, something in my personal life. So it is kind of timely through that year, but they're kind of timeless stories. So each little story is almost like a sip of coffee. So one of the places that I spoke at, the sales team said they read one story every morning, Monday morning when they have their sales team meeting, to kind of pump people up, because they're all stories about like famous failures, about people like Oprah and Anderson Cooper and Tina Fey and all these people that you look at. Like Anderson Cooper's one example that I wrote about and I speak about him in my talks, where, you know, his grandfather was Cornelius Vanderbilt that built all the railroads across the states, and his mom was Gloria Vanderbilt with the Jean line, and I mean money till the end of time. But he was told as a young child, you won't be getting an inheritance. That's just the plan. And so that really colored his whole upbringing. Because if you're told as a child, you're going to have billions of dollars when you grow up, I mean, why would you put the self-discipline and the grit and all these things in? So when he finished college, he wanted to work in the news, and he couldn't even get an interview. He couldn't even get a job making coffee at CBS News. And he had a name, like he had family connections. So he got a VHS camera and went out taking all these video clips of what was happening, and the network started playing them. So this is how he clawed his way up, and now we see him every night on CNN. You think, well, Anderson Cooper, I mean, he had family connections, and so this is an example of the little stories that I tell that remind people, you know, Jordan, Barack Obama, Oprah. I mean, Oprah was fired from a job for not being great for television, and Disney was fired for not having a good imagination. I mean, who was that boss, right? So I just felt that when I spoke in schools and when I've shared the book, a senior's home, there's a lot of them are now in school libraries. When I spoke at schools, they brought them into the school library for people to read and find people that are maybe having a bit of a struggle. I mean, even my mom, she's a 2-time colon cancer survivor, and she's always been like, get up, dress up, show up, never give up. And so I feel like sometimes if someone picked up a book like that on a waiting room coffee table and read a couple stories about people who got through those struggles, that it would help them. So I thought, let me make the goal lofty, and then just asking people to pass the book through their network. So if they read it and they have a favorite story, or they feel that there's someone in use reading some of these inspirational stories, then I just ask that they pass it on. So it's been great so far. And everybody kind of has a favorite story. You know, even Barack Obama, what I love about Barack Obama's story is, like, in 2000, he couldn't get a ticket to the national convention. He couldn't get in. 2004, he's the keynote speaker. And I remember watching his speech and jumping out of my chair, like, who is this politician? Like, he was amazing. His speech was incredible. And then 2008, he's the president of the United States. So in 8 years, he went from not getting into the Democratic National Convention to being president. And I feel like we can all really do that in our own lives on a different scale or whatever our goals are. And those are the kind of stories I tell in the book.
So this sounds like a book that is full of hope and future and definitely perspective, which you can tell I love.
Yes, it's a great word. I'm a hope warrior. I kind of see myself as a hope warrior.
Oh, I love that. I love that. But I like that at the end of the day, if you could just look at the stories of all the individuals that so many of us, you know, put up on these high esteem, these pedestals, but there's a backstory, right?
Always.
And there was a journey of struggle and a journey of failure and falling down and getting mud on their teeth. And then they stood back up and now we look at them and go, holy cow, couldn't I be just like them? And the answer is, yes, you could if
right.
you have the self-discipline and the passion and the drive to continue moving forward, regardless of the mud on your teeth.
Well, and that's the whole thing. It's like Brené Brown talking about, like, you want to be around the people that are in the arena daring greatly, the people that are, like, there is always going to be people on the sidelines that aren't invested in the, you know, they're not in the arena, and they're very, it's very easy for them to comment and say, who do you think you are? Why are you doing this? You know, you're never going to make it. But I want to be around people that have the mud on their face, and they're struggling to get through. And even Winston Churchill, which I talk about in my book, I think when I went to his two movies in the last few years, Dunkirk and The Darkest Hour, and you think, you know, there's a street where I live named after him. So of course he always knew what he was doing in my mind. You know, he always had the answers. And when I saw the movies and read some of his books, and it's like, wow, you know, he basically his whole life wanted to be prime minister. And the day he gets the job, they say, by the way, Hitler's winning the war. You just have to have peace talks. And there's, you know, 350,000 allied troops in Dunkirk being pushed into the ocean. And instead of him just saying, okay, I guess it's over. I guess that's all we can do. This is what society's telling me we have to do. He puts his hand up and says, does anybody have a boat? And, you know, 800 British families say, well, we have boats. And they drive their personal boats across the sea to Dunkirk and save all these soldiers. And this is the turning point of the war. And we'd be in a different place today if it wasn't for that. But when you look back, you think, well, of course the leaders always knew what to do. And of course, you know, but that's an example of our own lives. I mean, we have our own Dunkirks and wars and different things going on in our lives. And do we just lay down and say, well, society says this is the way it is, or I'm going to do it my way. And I think we have to kind of remember that we have a strong, you know, lighthouse in our heart.
I think there's so much power in that, because the reality of it is we sort of, especially with social media, because most people, not most, all people have an opinion. There's some very strong opinions out there on social media, and we're afraid of getting it wrong. We're afraid of being outed in front of, you know, people we know, and maybe we respect or don't respect it, you know, regardless. But I think that there's so much power when you stand tall with conviction and just say, here's my choice. Here's my decision. Here's
right.
what I believe in. And the reality of it is you will have people who disagree. That is a guarantee. There will
right.
always be opposing sides, and it
right.
doesn't make you right, and it doesn't make them wrong, but you have to be strong enough in your convictions to still move forward. And I think that is what makes leaders great and why we do idolize them. But I believe, and I know you believe, we are all leaders. We
True.
All have that ability. You just have to be okay with having some people who are not in the arena with you.
Well, 100%. And even they say with art, like, what makes great art is that there's people who love it and people who hate it. So I'm sure you look at something like the Mona Lisa, everybody's rushing to see it. And there's going to be people out there that say, I don't have any time for that painting. Like, but that's what makes it so great.
That would be
you have to have strong opinions, right? So even about ourselves, if everybody loves us, and I'm not saying go out and look for enemies, but they're basically the people who aren't crazy about you just aren't your tribe. They're not your people. So just surround yourself like with the people that, you know, make you feel empowered, and know that there's going to be people out there that see things differently, do things differently. There's going to be people that think you're too much, or you're too this, or you're too that. And that's great. That's their opinion, and they're entitled to it. And they need to live their life, and you need to live ours, because you only have one life, right? So do you want to exchange today in your life thinking about what somebody that, you know, doesn't, that somebody doesn't like you? It's kind of a waste of a day in your life, right?
your kids have to be, if they're not, I'm sending them this message. They have to be so grateful to have you as a mom, you know, it's because there's people out there who don't have that sort of a positive influence. You're very open-minded. You're looking at the world from many different angles. And I think there's so much power in being a child raised by a mom like that. So kudos to you for doing that, because
I definitely have my flaws. I'm sure they wouldn't give me a 10 out of 10, but
all do.
But well, we all do, but I am a big believer in them following their heart subject wise. Like I've always said, the most important page of the report card to me is the front page that talks about teamwork and collaboration and initiative, not the marks. Because in the end, like they get good marks, and I expect them to try, you know, try at school, but they're probably going to get jobs in whatever they have A's in. They're probably not going to follow a path that they have kind of a lower mark in now. So I just want them to try their best, do their best, but, you know, follow their heart with what they want to do with the rest of their life, because, you know, that way you win the lottery. If you're doing something you love, you never work a day in your life, right?
Totally true. You just reminded me of the book Strength Finder 2.0. I love that book because it focuses purely on the strengths. And so unfortunately, so much of us, especially as parents, we sometimes focus on the overall grades. Right. But the reality is we're not all going to be, you know, A+ math students. I certainly was not. It is not a skill I possess. But I was really good in writing and communications. Right. That was my skill, right?
Right.
And
the
proof is in the pudding today. And I'm still, a C in math.
Right. And I think back to my years of parallelograms and calculus. And I mean, it's not something that I've used in my life. I had to take certain math courses to get, again, your goals and your self-discipline. So I did what I had to do, but that's not my favorite thing either. But you know, you kind of go through life. And if you can find your niche, especially at a younger age, like my older guy's into film and photography, and that's kind of what his heart is in. And so if he follows that, and my youngest is into a really artistic, and she likes painting and art and things like that. And my middle guy loves he'll be like a business person or giving presentations. So I just say to them, like, take the courses that speak to you and follow your heart.
Absolutely. So I totally appreciate you coming on today and taking a chunk out of this one big life for me. I totally appreciate that. So thank you. One last question for you. What does perspective shifting mean to you?
Well, to me, perspective is so key. That's when they talk about resilience too. Basically, resilience. One of the studies I read about recently was they looked at kids that were from kind of more traumatic backgrounds. And the researchers came in and said to the teachers, out of these kids, which ones are actually doing well? And the teachers kind of thought, oh, wow, nobody's asked us that before, because they usually ask which ones are not doing as well. And really, it was the ones that were very independent and were very, had that locus of control internally rather than externally. So they thought, I can make something happen. And I think that perspective is everything, because if you see a failure as a flaw, so that's the whole fixed mindset, I failed, there's something wrong with me, that perspective is the light that you move forward with. You think there's something wrong with you. Whereas if you see that failure as a lesson, oh, okay, so I didn't understand that, and now I understand it. So it's, you know, perspective is everything. If you see a bad experience in your life as a personal failure, and it was because of you, or at the same time, if you blame others and say, it was my partner, it was my kids, it was my teacher, you're never going to kind of grow that kernel inside. So I think if we look at perspective as basically the key to growing that muscle for grit and resilience, and always look at, like, really look for the silver linings. And I know they can be hard. I mean, my mom is a 2-time colon cancer survivor, and she even said at the beginning it was a bit of a blessing, because it kind of slowed her down and made her really look at, wow, what am I worried about? What am I stressed about? What's really important? And that was her experience. But I've heard that from other people as well that go through traumatic experiences, that it kind of stops them in their tracks. And again, that's the perspective, that this might be seen as not very, you know, a not very good thing happening to me now, but what can I take out of it? And what can I, you know, use to grow with? And especially in this time with the global pandemic, I think it's really challenging, because we don't have an exit plan. This is what I think is stressing people out. But I think if we look at it like, even in the regular normal world that we had before the pandemic, we really didn't know what was going to happen tomorrow. Like, would we get the job? Would we get the course? Would we get into the school? But it just wasn't as exacerbated as it is now. So I think if we look at it like, perspective is finding the silver linings, putting the work in, having the self-discipline and deciding, like with the book, writing 3 pages a week for a year, I had a book. If I had sat down and said, I'm writing a book, it would be overwhelming. So perspective is small bites, silver linings, and take action, I think is, you know, just do it.
I love that. I feel like every time somebody answers that question, I want to say that's my favorite response, but I know it's at some point that will get old, so I'm not going to say that.
No, that's awesome. I think perspective really is everything.
It is. I appreciate that, and I appreciate you. So how can people connect with you?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me on. That was a great, great, enjoyable conversation. My name is Siobhan Kukulik, and my website is named after me. So Siobhan Kukulik, it is spelled, first name is in Gaelic. So S-I-O-B-H-A-N, and then Kukulik, K-U-K-O-L-I-C.com. And at my website, there's links to my book, which is at Indigo and Amazon. And also I blog weekly, and the blogs are up on my website as well. On Facebook, it's facebook.com/thetreasureyouseek. And then you can follow me there and, you know, check out what I'm doing. And I hope if you get the book or if you read one of my blogs and you have an opinion, I'd love to hear your thoughts. And I'm on Twitter as well by my name, so you can catch me there. And I really enjoyed it. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you so much. And there she goes. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of The Balanced Perspective. Have your perspective shifted yet? Can I ask you a favor? To ensure I get to help other amazing entrepreneurs radically shift their perspectives, would you please leave me a 5-star review on iTunes and everywhere else you are tuning in? Oh, and P.S. If you want to continue this conversation, join me over on the gram at TA_Richards. And remember, if you change the way you look at things, the things you look at will change.